John Breaker One. This is Shark Pants Free Radio. Gamers, get your ears on because we're blowing the speakers out.
Grimdark Live. Weekly webcast for all things dice, dragons, demons, and a dwarf in the Warhammer worlds. Don't miss our live show on Thursdays, but for now, you've got us on sloppy seconds with our podcast with the Grimdark Gang. It's time once again for Grimdark Live.
Hey, welcome to Grimdark Live, weekly webcast for all things dice, dragons, demons, and a dwarf in the Warhammer worlds. I'm your host, Patrick, and as always, my co-host, Steve. What do you hear? What do you say, bud?
Well, happy 2020.
I know. Here it is, man. I can see clearly now, man. It's 2020. All right. That was really bad.
Wow. Really bad. Just move on. You already ruined the year, and it hasn't even started.
But I'm bummed. Tip the veal. Try the waitresses. Hello, folks. Yeah, I know. I screwed it up. But you know what? I here it is, man. 2020, we are back. New year, new Grimdark. Welcome to 2020, bud.
Hey, let me tell you, 2020 is about to start off with a bang.
It really is.
No pun intended, Karadrid Overlord.
Yeah, and Zeech.
Who?
Yeah, I know exactly. But I got to tell you, man, I know the box set, we were a little nervous about that when it first dropped. You know, pre-order, it didn't really sell out quite as fast as the previous one with the ogres and the Osiarch Bone Reapers, but it looks like it finally did sell out, huh?
Yeah, well, I'm hoping that the reason for that was the GW finally realized that people are getting sick and tired of them putting exclusive models in boxes and then having them sell out in a day.
Or the fact that this thing was...
Well, let's think. If you look at some of the earlier boxes,
right,
like the Flesh Eater Quartz one with the Skaven, those models are still not available. And that box set came out when?
Yeah.
So,
a year ago?
Nine months ago?
I mean, it was a long time ago.
Yeah, a very long time ago. So
that's a good point. God, I forgot
about
that.
Yeah, I mean, they've got to start, you know, producing those boxes in higher quantities.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's just common sense. If the box is selling out, or if they have been selling out, make more.
Yeah. Well, I was immediately starting to go with the fact that I thought maybe it was because it was $185 price point retail on that, US on
truth,
that.
I don't think people care whatsoever about the price. You know, you hear that all the time. Oh, it's too high. You know what? There isn't a gamer that you or I know that wouldn't pay whatever it would take to get the army that they love.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's true. That's true. It is quite the addiction, right? I mean, after all.
Yeah. Plastic crack, as they like to call it.
Yeah, but I tell you, we got a ton to absolutely go through today. I mean, we're really going to kick off 2020 with a bang, as you just put it. I mean, we've got in the news, we got Wrath of the Everchosen. We're going to talk about that. We got Warcry. We got some new models for Warcry that are out. Beast Graves got some new models. And we're going to be talking about something near and dear to my heart, man. I got to tell you, I got a little choked up, man. It was like, you know, I remember that scene in Lord of the Rings at the end, you know, when they're at the gates of Mordor, or, you know, the eagles are coming. And all of a sudden I went, proper elves. We're going to be talking about my very first army in Warhammer Fantasy Battles.
Well, and our first prediction came true. We said they were coming in the spring.
Yeah, you know what? Actually, I got to give you the credit, bud. You said it. So, yeah, I mean,
yeah, I knew they were coming.
But for anybody listening, that was another Grimdark Live exclusive. And we're going to be touching here in a little bit on the show a little bit later, another Grimdark Live. We're going to remind you, I should say, of another Grimdark Live exclusive that we kind of hit you guys over the head with first here. So, we got that. So we got the proper elves that are on the way. And, of course, as you kind of heard us meander on earlier, right at the beginning of the show, Karadrid Overlords and Zeech we're going to be talking about. But before we get rolling, I want to throw a special shout out to Randy, the nicest guy in tabletop gaming. And this isn't a crazy joke here, folks, or anything. He's going to be out of action for a short time due to some family and some medical matters. And I just want to say, you know, it always seems that the craziest and worst things happen to the nicest people. And I would just want to throw that out there. Randy, and anybody that knows him, incredible guy. You know, we're here for you, bud. And when you come back, the show will be all that much better for it. So, Randy will be out of commission for a little while.
Yeah, and we love you, brother, and we hope everything turns out well for you.
Absolutely, absolutely. So here it is, 2020. So, Steve, what did you do while you were away on Christmas and New Year's, man?
Well, I got enough Amazon cards to buy about 5 Arby's this year, so I think I'll be okay. I'm not worried about purchasing Arby's this year.
Yeah, you're gonna be well financed for your addiction.
Yeah, my plastic crack addiction will be increasing this year.
You didn't get arrested this year like last year on New Year's, did you?
Oh, for God's sake.
Kept your clothes on and all that kind of stuff?
Anytime he says this stuff, just ignore him and move on.
You want to tell the whole story right now, or do you want to just, you know,
move on?
I'm just thought I'd bring it up. You know, it's therapeutic if you talk about it. No, I had a good Christmas New Year's myself, man. I did a lot of stuff with the family, went up to Wisconsin and ran around and saw my daughter and she was in town from Philadelphia and it was
it's exactly what you should be doing. You know, it's like I said before we went off the air, you know, a couple weeks ago. The holidays are there for a reason. It's time for family and friends and cut back in the gaming a little bit and, you know, spend time with your family because in the end, they're the only thing that really matters.
Yeah. There's a lot of truth to that. And, you know, it was kind of a neat thing. My buddy Dave had his first, he and his wife had his first, their first baby over the break. Yeah. You know, I mean, but it was kind of a, It was kind of a bittersweet thing, you know. He was a little guy was born without eyelids, and so what they did was obviously they had to circumcise him. He was a baby, so they just used that circumcised skin for his eyelids. The operation was a success, but you know the kid's going to be a little cockeyed for the rest of his life. But you know,
I apologize, folks.
What do you mean? It's a heartfelt story. A guy can't even tell a heartfelt story without you getting all upset.
You have to have a heart to have a heartfelt story.
Hey, come on. This is a sad story. But hey, it's all, you know, it all ends
no,
well,
what's
right?
Sad is that you told it. Now move on.
Oh, gosh. Well, yeah. Speaking of moving on, here it is. And as always, we got the question of the day and the closing thought towards the end of the show. So, yeah, we hold on to your hats, folks. Keep your hands and your feet in the grimdark cart at all times.
Hey, you Grimdark goons. Thank you all so much for listening to our Grimdark Live podcast. If you're new to the Grimdark Live experience or new to our podcast and like what you hear, please follow this podcast and pass us along to your friends. Let us know what you think about Grimdark Live in the show's comment sections, and let us know just how we're doing. Also, don't forget to catch us live on Thursdays. And if that ain't enough for you, check out our website at www.grimdarklive.com. That's grimdarklive.com. Anyway, thanks for listening, following, and just being awesome.
Yep, here it is. We are going to jump right into the news. We're just going to keep the gas pedal down, man. We got a lot to get at. So here it is. So the news today is really the stories that extended and broke that were coming off of the Games Workshop New Year's Open Day 2020. So here we go. Steve, did you hear anything about this, the New Year's Open Day from GW?
Yeah, they were, it was last Saturday. Yeah. They were obviously going to reveal, tease a few new things that were coming out. One of them, of course, being the High Elves.
Yep. Yeah, that was. And we're going to save that one for the last. For, you know, for on my emotion, I have to do that. So I don't get all choked up. I got to get through the rest of the news. But, and as you heard here on Grimdark Live first, before anyone else outside of Nova Convention had even heard of it, was the night the news broke for the Nova 2019 was the rise of the OCR Bone Reapers. This was Nagash's, you know, obviously new Legion. There's a new supplement tome on the horizon where the ultimate evil versus evil mega chaos death fight happens. And that's going to be in a new book that's coming out called The Wrath of the Ever Chosen. Have you heard of this one, Steve?
Yeah. It looks like it's going to be almost like a Storm of Chaos kind of supplement. In other words, it's going to be a campaign book like we've seen before, kind of akin to Malign Portents.
Yes, that's correct. And the story, this is kind of neat. And I kind of like the direction that GW is kind of taking with this, because it reminds me of back in the day in 6th, 7th, and 8th edition Warhammer Fantasy Battles, when we had all these campaigns, these 3, 6, 9, 12-month-long campaigns. The Nemesis Crown and some of the other great campaigns that they had.
Lustria.
Yeah, the Dark Elves won Lustria, I think, if I remember right.
Yes, I believe. Yeah, they won a couple of them. They actually won Albion, too.
Yeah. They were pretty great. God, I love that Albion campaign, man. That was a good one. But in this particular book, that's called Wrath of the Everchosen, the story takes place across the 8 mortal realms. You know, and 8 of those mortal realms, the corners, lie within the 8 points, and that's the heart of Arcann's Empire of Chaos. So now the forces of death are making a play for the most strategically, you know, valuable citadel in creation. And the new book that I thought was kind of neat, The Wrath of the Everchosen, this tells the story of the Osiarch Bone Reaper's invasion of the 8 points. Now, obviously, we all know what the 8 points are. That's going to be the battle for the Varen Spire. And if that sounds familiar to you, the Varen Spire, obviously, with the invasion of the Varen Spire, this is an Age of Sigmar tie-in with Warcry, as the Varen Spire has been represented and described in the offshoot game Warcry. And I think it's funny. I shouldn't have maybe used the word offshoot, because it's kind of a... Yeah, it's not as popular as I think people wanted it to be, but it's definitely better off than what I said it was going to be. So now GW has brought the two game platforms together in this new book that's going to be dropping, The Wrath of the Everchosen.
Yeah, I love the story. I think that one of the things that, you know, if you follow the fluff, Nagash is not giving up. He is not going to cede his authority to Chaos. He is making a serious play against the Chaos realm, against the Chaos powers, the Ruinous powers, as they used to be called. And he's sending his Spartans against them. The Osiarch Bone Reapers are definitely going to wreck the forces of Chaos when they get them.
It's going to be a hell of a fight.
It's going to be a throwdown.
And I got to tell you, after seeing what's in the Osiarch Bone Reapers book, and I should say that fairly, and we're not going to get into this, but outside of maybe one, maybe two builds, and then seeing the Slaves of Darkness book, I think the edge might be given to the Osiarch Bone Reapers. I think the Plague Touch Warband might be able to give them a good run for their money in the Slaves of Darkness book. But I digress. At any rate. And so going back to what I was saying earlier, and keeping in mind with bringing the games together, there is apparently stuff for, you know, every gamer in the Wrath of the Everchosen book outside of just the functionality of it. There's going to be new rules for wandering monsters. There's going to be some roaming endless spells. And I've even heard about siege warfare. So I know that, you know, poor Randy, if he was on the show, he'd be jumping for joy, man. He's like the king of siege games. He loves those things. So it's funny that they're bringing this out in Age of Sigmar, because right now in Warcry, they've come out with these I'll call them supplemental books. One of them happens to be Monsters and Mercenaries for Warcry, and the other one is the Tome of Champions. And this is a lot like the General's Handbook, or maybe the chapter approved in 40K. And they're doing a lot of the same thing in Warcry. So I find it interesting that they're actually tying the two games together the way they are by these expansions. Chaos players, I guess, now are also going to get especially spoiled with the host of the new army options to represent the, you know, their forces from mortals to monsters to demonics, which I guess would explain the hints to the new models being dropped for Warcry that are also, by the way, in the Slaves of Darkness Battle Tome. So we're going to be talking about
GW's,
those guys.
They're fully invested in Warcry. I think they have a 3-year plan for that game. You're definitely going to see more models, newer stuff, different factions. There will be a time when every single faction in the game of Warhammer is covered in Warcry. It's coming.
Yeah, well, it's funny. And in the Warcry book, the Tome of Champions 2019, I know for a while there, Warcry had these cards, these player cards. Unit cards, I guess the best way to put them, that were, many people didn't know this, but they were on a limited release. And they're not available anymore. Well, it looks like in this Tome of Champions 2019, they've actually published all of the cards, and they've listed what additional cards are going to be coming out later on. So you're absolutely right, Steve. Every Age of Sigmar army unit, you name it, is going to be represented in this game. here very soon.
Well, they have to. Otherwise, you're going to have half or 75% of your players who play like Destruction, Order, whatever, any army that's not represented currently in Warcry, they're going to be like, well, what the hell do I care about this thing for? My, you know, I can't even play my models in it.
Yeah, yeah, you're absolutely right. And, you know, but one thing that they're doing that I thought was pretty cool, and being that you and I are kind of, you know, perverts for monsters, especially, you know, especially some of the girls we've dated in the past, I'll tell you. Anyway, so speaking of Aerenspire and its monstrous inhabitants, I guess the best way to put it, we've known for a while now, since around November of 2019, of the upcoming Warcry monsters. They have this the Fomoroid Crusher. I guess he's this beastie that can run around and throw rocks and different terrain features at you. They have the Mindstealer Sphinx, which is basically the big Egyptian cat looking thing, and then they have the Ogroid Myrmidon. I'm actually looking it up in the back of the Slaves of Darkness book right now. Yeah. Which I think is a total copy of the Ogre Thermaturge, but at any rate, so they got these guys coming out. And I remember when these guys were dropped right around end of October, early November, everyone was like, oh, cool, we got new models. But then it was almost like they never came out, and they were always supposed to be delivered. And people claimed that maybe it was the Sylvaneth backup that caused them not to come out, and other different rumors and speculations. But we know now that these are going to be early 2020 releases to be used in both Slaves of Darkness armies, but also you can take these guys in any Warcry battle tome, so as long as they're the cultists, from what I understand. Like, you won't be able to take them if you're running like the Gloomspite Gits squigs or something. So
yeah, and the models look fantastic. I mean, Slaves of Darkness, you could say what you want about how good the army will be, the models in it are phenomenal,
right? I mean, isn't that always the way, though, that the models that really look the best are generally kind of the worst in
gameplay?
Well, sure.
I mean, look at the Black Guard, you know, stuff like that, in the old Dark Elf factions. They're still great models. The Executioner's still great models, but their rules suck.
Yeah, yeah, you got that right. And, you know, going back here a little bit, we've already received the War Scrolls for AOS play for these models, like I said before, in the Slaves of Darkness release. More specifically, the War Scrolls that are in that Slaves of Darkness battle tome have been for a while ahead of the models being available for all of your sweaty palms. So we don't have an exact date yet, but we do know that according to GW that the models are going to be out early 2020. So I would say sometime before March. I think they're going to want to get those things out before Adepticon, I would imagine, because of the amount of Warcry that's being played there, and obviously the team tournament and the championships for AOS are going to be happening.
Yeah, I mean, GW is going to be absolutely swamped with news and business in this early part of the year.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we know that we have Caradhran and Tzeentch dropping in 2 days. You know, we know we have Seraphon coming afterwards, and we are guessing that the High Elves are going to be the Adepticon release.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, I'm going to save that one. I know you're knocking on that door, buddy, but we're going to save that we got a couple more things to go through in the news. We're going to hit that one right. We're going to end the news with that one. I'll save the best for last, yeah?
Sounds good.
But the next topic in the news this evening is one I personally thought couldn't get any better. After the release announced of the new Beast of Chaos in the Underworlds, this Beastgrave set, I thought, they got Beastie Boys, they got Beastmen, everything's going to be great now. They got Beast of Chaos in this thing, now I can play this game. But there's an incredible improvement to the game of Beastgrave. Have you heard about this, Steve?
No. Wait on me.
I mean, an incredible improvement. Even if they were to give this away in triplicate for free.
Oh, no.
So let me don't
do it.
Hold on.
Don't do it.
Don't fall out of your chair. You got to listen to this greatness. So,
folks, so, I apologize before he says anything.
So switching
gears.
Because
you all know what's coming.
While still fighting for a different type of glory in this newest Warhammer Underworlds Warband, the other boxed game apart from Warcry,
I'm sorry,
we have even more being delivered to our plastic addicted cravings by GW. Let me say this real quick. We got this dude, right? His name is Hrothgorn. The unit's called Hrothgorn's Man Trappers. Boy, that sounds like a couple of clubs.
What are you talking about?
Are coming to Beastgrave, and we have new Nobblers. Did you hear that, folks? Nobblers.
No,
can you hear the fireworks going off?
is that someone had some gunk on their shoe and they were scraping it off on the curb.
Wait, did the shithouse door just blow open again, Steve, or did you just say something? Anyway, fix your microphone. You're kind of coming through a little crazy. But let me, folks, you got to listen to this beauty right here. So Hrothgorn, his
You're going to stop talking about him?
His Frost Saber, Thrafnir, and his Nobbler followers. And here's the thing I'm going to say right now. I really think this warband is being promoted and represented incorrectly, Steve. On our friendship, I want to say this as honestly as I possibly can.
On
I really
our friendship,
think,
stop talking about them.
But here's the thing. Let me go. I think you bumped your head. Let me just say this. So this must be a typo. It should read, the greatest unit in the game, the stupendous, incredible, fantastic, marvelous, badass Nobblers and their followers, Hrothgorn and his pussycat. I think that sounds a lot better, don't you?
Sounds like a band from the 80s.
I got to tell you, you know, do you think, I really think that sounds more accurate personally.
Let me explain something to you.
What no did I say? One. I'm just asking.
Yeah, I mean, no one outside of you and that demented mind of yours cares about Nobblers. No one thinks about them. No one likes them. No one talks about them. You are the only one.
Steve.
So right now you are tormenting our listeners.
No, I want you to listen to this. Greatest unit in the game.
We're not talking Nobblers. About Slaanesh right now.
Nobblers. I'm telling you right now. I mean, just say it with me. Say it with me one time together. Nobblers. Say it with me.
Trash.
Come on. No, see, I think your microphone's broken. Try again.
Scum.
All right, here we go. See, folks, I really apologize for my sidekick here. He didn't take his medication tonight. And
sidekick?
You know,
what am I, Robin?
And, you know, boy, well, I'll tell you, I've seen you in those tights. That's a little...
That is the most disturbing thing you've ever
seen. Boy, you tell me, especially when you dropped your pencil. You know, 10 people ran out screaming.
Folks, lies.
All right, here we go. But Steve, here we go, buddy. So now that I gotta calm down and get away from those beautiful little bastards. So here we go. Now we come to the culmination of the news this evening. We've been hearing some rumors about someone who will be coming soon to the battlefields of the Mortal Realms once again. And Teclis and his proper elves are on their way this year. I can't wait to see what he
brings. It's about damn time.
Oh, I tell you what. I got to be honest with you. I literally went, and this is going to sound ridiculous, but I literally went and I grabbed my Warhammer 8th edition, Warhammer Fantasy Battles 8th edition Battle Tome High Elves. The beautiful cover art with the Dragon Prince on the cover. And I went and I read it again. I just went and I kind of flipped through it again and kind of went down memory lane of all of the great units. And of course, the only surviving units to speak of that are left from, you know, the mighty elves of Ulthuan of old are the Phoenix Guard, the Shadow Warriors. And who else? Who else is over there stuck there in the cities of Sigmar, in the island of Misfit
Toys? That's it. There are no high elves other than the Shadow Warriors.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I know that there's, you got the Dreadlord and the Black Dragon, but there's no high
elves. Those are dark elves.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess now that I think about it, I guess I really should take that back. I guess our beloved Shadow Warriors are no longer high elves, I guess. They've got the Shadow Blades keyword now, I think.
Well, You have to understand that GW has been planning this army for probably about 2.5 years.
Yeah.
My hope with this army is that they are going to bring back the units that we love and that they're going to give them, you know, a new design, maybe a new aesthetic to them.
Right.
I think.
Right. I hope so.
I think it'll be a travesty if we don't get our stuff like our Dragon Princes and our Sword Masters. Now, they've already shown conceptual art of the Sword Masters and the Spearmen, so we know they're coming.
Yep, pointy helmets and all.
But I want to see the White Lions. That was always my favorite unit for the High
Elves. Yeah, and they were a lot better in 7th edition than they were in 8th edition.
Well, but they had a great story behind them, too.
Yeah, they did. I mean, they saved the king from the Dark Elf Assassins and all that, yeah. Yeah.
That was the Shadow Warriors. The High Elves, the White Lions actually lived in a province called Trace.
Right, right. They were known as the Tracian Hunters. Yeah.
Yes, and they had to prove themselves by killing a White Lion and taking its cloak. I love that story.
But I thought they became White Lions because they saved Kalidor. He was going to be assassinated by
Well, they are the bodyguards of the king. Right. They are the personal retinue of the king.
Okay.
The Phoenix King, whoever he may be.
Yeah. And I gotta tell you, folks, I mean, this army of what this is going to mean. I mean, I want you to picture really, and I'm going to say this right now, what R2-D2 was to Star Wars, you know, that one thing that kept saving everyone's ass, the High Elves in Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit were that one army that really was saving everyone's ass, from the eagles to killing the orcs on the wogs in that plane, you know, in the Hobbit. And they were always there.
And I think we have to be careful about being presumptuous about what this army is going to look like, because it may not be what we are thinking, you know, and this could, you know, obviously this could be a ruse by GW.
Oh, those bastards. You
know, seriously, they could be steering us in that direction thinking, oh, you're just going to get your classic elves, and it could end up being something spectacular, or God forbid they end up being something tragic.
Yeah. I mean, but folks, for you guys out there listening, maybe for some of the younger dice chuckers out there that don't understand what, you know, my fellow old man and I, you know, Steve and I are both here talking about when we reference the glittering host that really was the High Elves of old. I mean, this army was not only incredible with their martial prowess, but they had special rules like Valor of Ages. They had Lilith's blessings. They had dragon armor. They had arrows of Aisha. They had Fireborn. They had all of these, and their commanders. You really could look at this army, and you could almost see this army play out in real life. I mean, you really could see this army. You understood how J.R.R. Tolkien came up with the elves in his stories by looking at this army. Am I right or am I wrong? I mean, you know.
Yeah, I mean, the early Warhammer conceptual art is straight out of Tolkien's Lord of the Rings. I mean, the High Elves are definitely the elves of the Second Age.
Yeah, and you're right about the White Lions. I mean, honestly, they served as the personal guard of the Phoenix King.
Yes, they did.
They literally saved the
king. Which
is
why they were stubborn.
Yeah, well, that was a rule, yeah, an old rank and flank, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to be interested to see how they're going to tie in the Phoenix Guard, you know, back into their ranks, how
well,
that's going to
happen. Well, who says they have to? I mean, honestly, who says they have to?
Well, because honestly,
they
here's
may
the thing.
Have,
they're the
there's
Phoenix
no
Guard.
Reason they... Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead. I keep on... Go ahead.
Well, there's no reason that they couldn't split the faction. I mean, we have dark. We're going to have dark elves that are part of the cities, and we know that Melorian's army is coming probably right after the High Elves.
Yeah, but you know, for me, you know, when you look at the Phoenix Guard, they were the chosen of Asurin. They were the priests, man. They were the ones that presided over the flames of the Phoenix.
Exactly, that's the whole point. They presided over the flames of the Phoenix, the flame of Asurion.
Right.
They did not leave that island. The White Lions are the ones that would go into war with the king.
Yeah.
And many times the Phoenix Kings were not even warriors. They were more like philosopher kings.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, and you got to look at it this way. I mean, I'm even to further kind of walk down this road here. I'm a little curious. How are they going to tie in? I mean, Elariel, I guess she's no longer the Radiant. She's the Beetle Rider. You know, she's got leg day, but
well,
she was once the
own...
ever queen of Ulthuan. You know what, you know,
yeah. She's gone. She's part of her own faction now.
Yeah. But, I mean, do you remember all the great characters the High Elves had? They had...
Oh, phenomenal.
One of my favorites... Oh, well, one of my favorites was a tie between Alethanar, the Shadow King, and Eltharion the Grim. The Warden
See,
of,
I
believe
Cor
it was...
Hill.
Yavaris, I believe it was.
Corhill was always my favorite because
oh,
he was
yeah.
a White Lion champion. He was like a hero of the White Lions.
Yeah.
He was very friendly with the human kingdoms. You know, he was kind of like that ambassador from the High Elves that when he showed up, everybody loved him. You know, he was a well-loved and well-respected warrior.
Yeah, and they had that awesome banner of the World Dragon. Remember that thing?
Lord have mercy.
This was one of my favorites to go up against the Death Army. I would love if they came back out with something like this with all the Nagash and
who says
the
OGR
Bone Reapers. Well, I'll tell you what. Now, and let me address what this was. This one banner gave me the same looks and got me hated just as much as my Nobbler army does. Because here it is. All the units, all the Phoenix Guard units that had the banner of the World Dragon. It wasn't, I'm sorry, it didn't have to be Phoenix Guard.
It was a Super expensive banner. Only your battle standard could carry it.
Yeah, 50 points.
If I remember correctly.
Something like that, right. And what it was it gave the entire unit a 2+ ward save against all wounds caused by spells, magic, magical wounds, magic attacks. So that meant the way the rules were written back in Warhammer Fantasy Battles 8th Edition was magical attacks were, take Ossiarch Bone Reapers, because it was magic that brought them to life, you had a 2+ ward save against all of their attacks.
And in previous editions, you were completely immune to magic.
That's right.
While you had that banner.
That's right.
Completely. And nothing, no spell. Because it used to frustrate the living daylights out of me, because when I used to play my Skaven, I'd always try to throw Plague on one of the... I knew they always had it on the one unit. So I would throw Plague on one unit, but when Plague would bounce, if it would bounce to that unit, it just ended because it couldn't affect them.
Yeah, right. But it was great, man. I can remember many times my Phoenix Guard just being a lawnmower on the table, just going right over skeletons, zombies, heroes. It was a beautiful thing. But yeah, so I really hope, I mean, they got a big hill to climb with this army. I mean, you're talking about the army of Tyrion and Teclis. And I wonder...
High expectations, too. They better not screw this army up.
No, I got to tell you, look, if they pull another stinkwad out of their shorts like they did with the Ogre Maw tribes, goodbye. I mean, that will be...
Yeah, it's going to be hard to get over this one. If the High Elves suck, it's going to be hard to get over this one, because now, I'm not going to play them. I have no intention of playing them, but... That is an army that should rightfully be at the top spot of the badass armies, and it better be good.
Yeah, I got to tell you,
we've been waiting 2.5 years for this.
Yeah, you know what though, they really got a mountain to climb, and think about it: the mages, the dragons, you know, the spearmen. You know, you talked about having flailings, back in the spearmen again. The knights, the good God, the dragon prince, Galador.
Yeah, the chariots.
Yeah, the griffins. How can we forget about the griffins? We're talking about the eagles. We forget about the griffins. So, I mean, they have a lot. And I just wonder, is Teclis going to be on a dragon? I mean, if you think about it this way, look at Arcann. Arcann started out with a little.
He's never been on a mount.
Tyrion, not Teclis. I mean, Tyrion. Tyrion was on a horse.
Tyrion was on a horse. I can see him on a dragon, definitely.
Well, they did it with Arcann.
I think once again, and I don't know why, I just have this funny feeling that Tyrion may not be in that book.
Why do you say that?
I don't know, and I'm probably wrong, and I hope to God that I am, but I have a feeling that Tyrion may have his own separate army, or at the very least, I think in this new book, Tyrion is going to have his own like separate kind of troops that he'll be able to take, like almost like a battalion or something. There's something in what they released. Why did they show only Teclis and not Tyrion? Those two are together like peanut butter and jelly. Why did they not feature Tyrion? That makes me nervous. That
I don't know.
Something's going on. I don't know. Maybe it's just paranoia, but they were very specific about saying this is Teclis's army.
Yeah, they were. You know, it's funny. We got high class white trash with us tonight, man. And he just wrote on the board. He said, Teclis will use the distraction to amass his army. So yeah, maybe that's what this is all about. I mean, it's interesting because I'm probably more curious than a grown man should be about what they're going to do here with the High Elves. But because this was my first army, and because in lore, different stories, they're always generally my favorite characters, except for the Wood Elves. Those granola chomping hippies can go jump off a cliff. I don't care about them, but.
Those are your kinsmen, your brothers.
No, those. What was the famous phrase? Those faithless woodland sprites. Yeah.
Faithless woodland sprites. Yes. Yeah.
Yep. That's how I've always felt about them. I don't know. In the words of Dick Nixon, shut up, hippie. Any rate. All right. Moving on.
Okay.
So that's the.
Well, never did I think that Nixon's name would be invoked in this conversation tonight, folks.
And right now, I'm just picturing all of our younger listeners. They all just grab their phone and they're like, "Who the hell is Dick Nixon?" And be careful when you Google that, kids. Hey, gang, I wanted to take a break in today's show to introduce one of our sponsors and a great store for all of your hobby needs. That's Game Storm Gaming in Lamont, Illinois. Open 7 days a week, 12 to 12.
Game Storm Gaming has got you covered for all of your hobby and gaming needs. They got Magic the Gathering, War Machine, X-Wing, Game of Thrones, Force of Will card game, PC gaming and repair, Warhammer 40K, and Age of Sigmar, and a ton more. Grab paints, brushes, cases, dice, and a lot more at GameStorm Gaming in Lamont, Illinois.
Stop in and see John and the gang there at GameStorm Gaming, located at 1243 State Street, Lamont, Illinois, or check them out on their website at GameStormGaming.com. Again, that's www.GameStormGaming.com.
They also stay open past midnight for special cases and events, so get over there and get your nerd on with GameStorm Gaming. 1243 State Street, Lamont, Illinois, 630-243-9330. Again, that's GameStorm Gaming, 1243 State Street, Lamont, Illinois.
GameStorm Gaming is a proud sponsor of Grimdark Live. We hope to see you there. All right, so let's keep rolling with the show. So that's the news, man. So we got a lot of exciting stuff happening, man. And I got to tell you, I'm as giddy as a madman with my nobblers and with my elves, so pretty happy with that. But let's get rolling here, Steve. We got a mountain to climb here ourselves. These next two topics, we are going to be addressing the new releases that went on pre-order last week with the new box set, and that are going to be out in everyone's sweaty palms as new and improved armies. And that is going to be the Karadrin Overlords and the Tzeentch. And Steve, I thought we'd start talking about the Karadrin Overlords right off the bat. And I have my advanced copies of the book here, so I do apologize. But good news is, folks, and then Steve, you can back me up on this. You'll probably say it a lot better than myself. We're not going to do a book review. You know, if you want that, you know, there's other shows for that. What we're going to do, because we try to be more of a community based show than, you know, glue sniffer, war scroll wiping type of show. We want to really talk more about our opinions, some things we saw, some of the high lows. And you know, on the board, maybe get some of your opinions, right? Did I say that well enough, Steve, or did I botch that?
No, it's fine.
Yeah. So, all right, Karadrin Overlords, take it away, man. What do you think?
I think it's a Band-Aid book. I don't think it's a new book. Some of the things that I've seen, it's just going to be what it's always been. It's going to be a shooty army with new tricks. I like the idea that the frigates can now be battle line, but you know, you and I have been talking about that for months now, how they're moving into monsters as battle line.
I know. Yeah.
And that's been happening. I don't have a problem with that as long as it makes sense. For instance, if we have a giant army someday and giants are battle line, I'm okay with that. It makes sense. So I don't have a problem with the frigates being battle line. I like this new rule that, not to jump around too much, but I like this new rule of fly high.
Yes.
This is an ode to fifth edition. And the way this works is the Karadrin Overlord ship can pull out of combat, fly up high, so it can't be, you know, targeted. It basically, it's a free Hand of Gork. And you could set your ship down
right
anywhere on the battlefield. 9 inches away from the enemy, of course, 3 inches in from the table, I believe it said.
Right.
And that's a great rule. I mean, just think about that. You know, you're stuck, you're in a bad combat that you need to get out of quick. Not only can you retreat, but you retreat, you fly high, and you can land anywhere in the battlefield you want.
That's true, yeah.
Not a bad rule.
No.
So I don't think this is going to be a bad book, but here is my fear. And I apologize to any Karadrin Overlord player out there. That's
Dave,
listening.
I want to apologize for Steve right now before he poops on your parade.
I wish I could say that I'm going to see this army in 8 months, but I've got a real bad feeling that it's going to fade into obscurity quick.
Wow.
Well, there's nothing new in this book that is going to knock your socks off. It's going to be the same army it's always been. It's going to be a shooting army.
Yeah.
It has a few new tricks, but is that a patch or is that just a Band-Aid?
Well,
I don't think that GW put a lot of effort into this book outside of the fact that they knew it was going to be exactly what it was intended to be, a Band-Aid. It's just to pacify the Corrodron Overlord players, give them a semi-decent book, and move on. It's going to be a solid 7.
Okay. All right. I think that's fair. I think that's probably where I'd put them. I think my perception and my opinion of them is a little bit different, and I'll get into that, but I think you're right. I think for the most part, if I can kind of take a backward step here with Corrodron Overlords, they really came out of the gate stumbling. They were this, and the rumor was, and I don't know how truthful this is, but the rumor was that some of the heads over at GW back in the day, about 10 years or so years ago, wanted to come up with a 40K dwarf army. And it didn't take, you know, it was kind of like the pineapple burger from McDonald's. Nobody wanted it. So it got shelved. And the idea just kind of sat there for a while. And when Age of Sigmar came out, they said, well, let's give this army a try. And they've always, I think, struggled with, almost like they're, and I don't want to say they're trying to put the cabbage through the keyhole, but it seems to me that they're struggling with this army almost from the get-go.
I think they were intending from the very beginning to create a steampunk kind of army. They thought that kind of aesthetic would catch on. And I think that it failed miserably after they lost the clown car ability. When they were able to clown car, they were fine. You know, they were ridiculous. But now that they've lost that ability, we're right back to square one.
Yeah. Let's kind of look at some of the things here real quick. Cause I want to address some, you know, my 2 cents on the army. Cause you know, and folks, what you just said, Steve, is probably a lot more feet on the street logic and correct. I'm going to try to look at it from some of the things I noticed that are, I guess I'd call them the big changes that I think were an attempt to improve the army from when it first came out. The Aether Gold, however it's pronounced. Each hero,
similar to Urgold for the Fire Slayers.
Yeah, each hero, sky vessel, or unit of 10 plus models in your army, of course, on what I'm talking about here are the Corrodron Overlords. They can start with a share of Aether Gold, which allows one unit per phase to get a one-time triumph effect. You know, like if you're less points than your opponent, you can use the triumph effect. Which, you know what, every little thing helps.
Sure does.
You know, Corrodron Overlords previously had limited access to rerolls, but that changes now, you know, with access to triumphs for their heroes, sky vessels, and as I said before, large units is great when you consider the versatility that you're going to have. Rerolling hits or wounds for a phase or rerolling saves when, you know, a certain unit is exposed to some danger or to use a command ability without needing a command point, you know, these things all add up and several mechanics within this battle tome that I've kind of seen allows for extra shares of Aether Gold, I guess. If I'm saying that right again here, folks, I apologize if I'm not, to be doled out amongst your units. And while it's not exactly an exciting allegiance ability, it's certainly a much appreciated boost. I could see where a lot of the Corrodron Overlord players that have been loyal to him from the beginning, I would say that it's a much appreciated boost across the board for this faction. And it's seemingly come at no real cost. That's kind of why that was one of the first big changes and benefits I kind of saw to the Overlords.
Sure.
Sky vessels, you know, the iconic Corrodron sky vessels, they've received significant improvements.
Yes, they're now gunships as they always should have been.
Exactly. How many times did we say, that's it? That's all the thing shoots?
Yeah. You look at these boats and you're like, okay, this thing is supposed to be an ironclad. Okay, I don't know if anyone knows what an ironclad was outfitted with back in the day, but it was loaded with guns, loaded with cannons. Why is it I'm only getting shot one or two times and that's it?
Right, right. And you know, the thing is, these things can now fire. Not only is their firepower increased, but they can now fire from a position of strength. I'd have to say, I mean, receiving the benefit to cover, which is a plus one save, benefits to harder hit, which is a negative one, while, you know, riding
the
iron.
The army will do just fine.
Yeah.
It will be a solid seven. The benefit, the armor has improved for some of the units.
Yep.
The
well,
points
they
changed.
They can ride along the ironclads or the
frigates.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is going to be a great little army. Karadrin Overlord players have nothing to worry about. It's going to be a solid seven. Guys, I play Gloomspite Gits. They're a solid seven.
Okay.
That's all they're ever going to be.
Yeah.
And I'm happy with that. I'm fine.
Yeah.
And you I know, think Karadrin players are going to be the same. It's going to be a great 7 out of 10 book.
Yeah. And I want to kind of just touch on one thing. I want to go back to the guns here. You know, the guns, folks, and again, we're not War Scroll wackadoos. We're not going to get into that. You know, if you want, you know, go on.
You know who to go to if you want that.
Get
stuff,
the book.
Yeah.
But here it is. The main guns of these vessels, they really did, folks. They really did see a widespread improvement to range. You know, chance to hit 3+ for cannons, and in some cases, their damage got improved. I know that the Arcanaut Ironclad's main gun is now a flat 6 damage.
Yes, it always should have been.
I mean, holy crap.
It's a gunboat. It should have guns that do something.
Yeah.
Think about it, folks. If you have a weapon on a gunship and it only does D3 wounds, big deal. My trolls can do that by throwing rocks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, really? Is that all a gunship does? A gunship should be feared.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And now it will be when it does damage 6. That's a character killer.
You're damn right about that. I mean, damage 6 is huge. I mean, the Sky Cannon, in all of its varieties now, has access to shrapnel option.
Love
which
it.
Allows you to trade one of the big shots for D6 weaker shots, which I would say is useful in a pinch. I mean, coming from a guy like myself that plays ogres, you know, the Iron Blaster, I mean, you have options there. And I think Dwarden now, worldwide, are really going to be pleased to hear that they've received an improved armor save. An Ironclad is 3+, while the Frigate and the Gun Hauler are both 4+.
So they
both increased by 1. And so I think, and as Steve just mentioned a little earlier, the fly high to escape danger or reposition, I think is a huge, probably the best one they got.
Great
probably,
rule.
In my opinion, probably the best one.
Yeah, and it's a great rule.
Yeah, and in the hands of a smart player, they're going to use the hell out of that ability.
Yes, and what's nice about what you're going to see a lot of now, the Enrin Masters are able to now make the Enrin balloon guys and the Sky Wardens. They're now core. They can now be used as battle line. So you're going to see a lot more of them and a lot less of like your basic, like your Arcanauts.
That, you know what? Now, that's a really good point. I bet you're right.
Well, think of your whole army flies.
Yeah.
The balloon guys, the Sky Wardens, can be attached to the ships. They can follow along with them and then they can release from it. And now you're flying over the whole table. The whole army is a flying army.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't.
But that is huge.
Yeah, yeah. You know what that is. But you know what's funny? This all comes with a trade-off, as all three of the varieties of the Sky Vessels are now more expensive.
Here's where you're going to see this army fall apart.
Okay.
Any army that is, they're going to shoot the living daylights out of anything that hits them.
Mm-hmm.
But once I do hit them, if I have even half of my strength left, they're dead.
You're talking about with your trolls.
Oh, absolutely. If I get any of those gunships in combat with 6 trolls, they're gone. I'll kill them in 1 round of combat. And that's for ogre players. That's any of the players who are out there that have high damage armies. Because believe me, with all the shooting in the world, you're going to miss. With all the shooting in the world, you're not going to kill everything.
Well,
and when I do get to you, God help you if I'm a fast army like the eels.
Right.
You know, I'll be on you and you'll be dead.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I gotta be truthful. I mean, it's kind of like the Bane, that whether it's Age of Sigmar or 40K, right? I mean, look at the Tau army. They've always been touted as this army that can shoot you from across the street.
Yep.
But once they get into, once you get into combat with them, it's, it's
yeah. Here's where you're going to see this army. This is where this army is going to fool people. In some battles, you're going to be that guy that gets lucky and mm-hmm. takes out those crucial heroes. You're going to be that KO player that's going to be able to shoot off the most important unit and then leave them with nothing left to fight with. Yeah. You're going to be that guy, but you're also going to be that guy that's going to be sitting there facing 8 to 12 Iron Guts or 12 Trolls or 12 units or big three-man units of Varengard, whatever. Name whatever big nasty you can think of.
Mm-hmm.
Once those things get into contact with your frigates or your ironclads, great. You have a 4-up, you have a 3-up save. If I have a rend of 2, you're going down.
Yeah.
Anything that has high damage, you're going down. Now, is that going to happen all the time? No, which is why I said this is going to be a solid 7 army.
Yeah, and you're talking about a scale of 1 to 10.
Oh, absolutely. Scale of 1 to 10, it's going to be a 7.
Curiously horrified. I couldn't spit that out. To see what your number 1, like what a 1 army would be. Don't say Nobblers, Jagoff. All right, let's keep going.
Who?
So, but I really think that I agree with you. I mean, a 7 probably does make sense. I mean,
yeah.
But let's round out our little chat here about the Krogan Overlords with
sure.
with the command traits and the artifacts. What I think was an improvement as well is each hero type now has their own table yes. to choose from.
And I like that. That's a nice rule.
Yeah, and even Sky Vessels are going to get individual tables to choose from depending Love on it. Their war scroll. Now, while I would be remiss to say that they're all great, I mean, more options is always a good thing.
Yep.
And there's likely to be some depth to your choices going forward. So I think, like I said before, here's my take on the Krogan Overlord before we get into Tzeentch here. I think Krogan Overlords is going to have that niche, you know, talking to you, Dave, I think they're going to have that niche. And Kyle, I'm not leaving you out of this one either, too. I know the couple of guys in our gaming group are avid players of these guys. But I think they're going to have a niche following, like most dwarves, most Dwarden yep. or Fire Slayers.
Dwarf players.
But I think what this army has, this Krogan Overlords has over, say, the, I guess now Cities of Sigmar, when I refer to the Dispossessed or the Fire Slayers, is this army, to me, feels to be less forgiving. Like, you are really going to pay for every mistake you make with this army, where
Correct.
Other armies tend to be more forgiving in the realms of mistakes.
Yeah,
and I think you're gonna, for every one mistake you make with this army, you're gonna pay twice, and that's
yeah,
why
you
I
can't
think
afford.
Happen.
Yeah, you can't afford to have, you can't even afford to have one round of bad shooting with this army.
Yeah,
you must be average every time for this army to work. If this army has one bad round of shooting, I don't think they're going to bode very well. Or it's right. not going to bode very well for them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I got to tell you, yet to be seen, but I think GW True. Has just struggled with this army. And I got to put it out there to all you Krogan Overlord players out there. I tip my hat to you, man. I mean,
yeah.
As far as dedication to an army, the aggravation, the building of those models, the painting, the getting out there and playing them, promoting them, sticking by them. You know what Krogan Overlord players remind me a lot of? The old Bretonian players. Don't they, in a way?
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
most of them are fiercely loyal to the army.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. They kind of remind me of those guys.
They have great, I mean, look, the KO has great models. It has great new rules. There is nothing for a KO player to complain about. This will be a great book. It will be a lot of fun to play. It's a shooting army. Any KO player going into this army, you know, anyone going to play KO knows this. So they're making all of the appropriate sacrifices that they have to make. It's going to be a shooting army, and it's going to come with all the pitfalls and all the bonuses and boons of a shooting army. That's what it is. That's what it's designed to be. And I don't think any KO player is fooling themselves. They know what that army is going to be.
Yeah. And it'll be a seven, as far as we say it. All right, good.
Hey, I hope we're wrong. I hope it crashes. I hope it goes right through the meta and becomes a nine. I'd love to see it.
I would love to be wrong. You know what's funny? I would love to be wrong for those KO players, those dedicated. I got to tell you, I love their players because I love that dedication and the sacrifice that those guys put in every day. And girls, I suppose. I haven't seen a girl play one yet, but to get out there and play that army. So bravo to you guys that are doing it, man. You got a lot more, commitment than I do. I wouldn't be able to do it.
No, they're not for me, but I love the models, but they're just not for me.
Right.
A public service announcement brought to you by Frag Factory 3D Printing. Many of us have thousands of dollars in miniatures, yet we play on flat tables with books and overturned Tupperware to act as our fantasy and sci-fi landscapes. We've all drooled over the tables we see in magazines, lush with beautifully created terrain from all genres. The crew at Frag Factory 3D Printing want to wipe that drool from your chin and put it firmly on your friends and fellow gamers when they see your setup. Alien landscapes, desert wastelands, futuristic cities, fantasy outposts, elven forests, demonic stronghold, and so much more. Find out what you've been missing by checking us out on Facebook at Frag Factory 3D Printing or send us an email at fragfactory3dprinting@gmail.com. Bring your own files or we will help you find what you've been searching for. Take your gaming to the next level with Frag Factory 3D Printing. We print life into your games. Tell them Grimdark Live sent you, and your first hour of printing is free.
Hey gang, in all seriousness, get your terrain on the table and get it with Frag Factory 3D Printing. And remember, tell them Grimdark Live sent you and they'll give you 1 hour free. You can get them via email at fragfactory3dprinting@gmail.com or their Facebook page, Frag Factory 3D Printing.
Frag Factory 3D Printing, printing life into your games.
Now, back to the show. All right, well, let's keep rolling. We got to change now, man. We're going to change to a different topic.
Pun intended.
No pun intended. So, Steve, let me roll this one off here first.
Sure.
You kicked off the Caradrons. Let me roll this one off here. So
go for it.
Zeech. A lot of this review or this conversation may sound like I'm disappointed, but after a lot of thought, I'm not. I felt like the original Zeech book was strong. It was a strong foundation for what Age of Sigmar had become. It was one of the early books that set the standard, I guess, the best way to put it, for how the game functions in its current, incarnation. And the Zeech book has held up remarkably well. I'm talking about the old one. In 2016, Zeech won Adepticon, and since then, we've usually seen one of those armies or some adoration of that army in the top 10 every so often at major tournaments around the globe. I feel that the original book was fine. And after reading the new book, which folks, I'm going to tell you right now, I have finally successfully read the entire new Zeech Battle Tome, I'm not sure why this one was needed. And before the Zeech players out there get all bent out of shape. But here goes with my thoughts from the last Battle Tome to this new one. It needed some changes to the math, but the core design was sound. As one would expect, Zeech is good at magic, competing with Legions of Nagash for the best wizards in the game. So, not taking anything away there. Zeech also is a ranged army, which is powerful in a game where most of the fighting is in melee. And while most units tend to have poor saves in this army, a lot of the units are 5+, 6+, you had tools to keep your distance and hopefully weaken the enemy enough before they got too close. And there's always the 6+ ward save that either the Arcanites with those shields or the demons are going to get. The book's most characteristic trait, however, in my opinion, was that the army had lots of tricks. Now, again, I know that's kind of the motif of the whole change host and the trickery and all that kind of stuff, sleight of hand, but it really does have a lot of tricks. And given the changer of ways capricious nature, I guess, it made sense that his forces were unpredictable and constantly changing. And the army does still reflect this. Was that a kind of a fair opening for what we're going to talk about here, was each?
Yeah, I think it was pretty accurate.
Yeah. And their army ability remains completely untouched. You know, the fate dice are still 9 dice you roll at the beginning of the game and then put them aside. You can use these dice to substitute for almost any role in the game. There's a few ways to add more dice to the pool, but for the most part, the power in this relies both in the ability to make critical rolls at the proper time and also as a psychological effect for your opponent.
And that ability alone is such a game breaker,
mm-hmm.
because any one of those dice that can be substituted could change the entire course of the game.
You're not kidding. Yeah.
And I've seen it happen. Believe me.
Yeah. I mean, your opponent has to deal with the idea that you're in control of the dice, which can throw off their entire game.
Oh, and it was devastating in a tournament that I played in. Absolutely devastating.
Yeah. But before we start peeling more onion layers back, I mean, what is your high-low opinion or thoughts on Zeech? Whether it be Zeech in the olden days, Zeech now?
No, I was ever going to play any of the Chaos armies, Zeech would probably be the one I would play.
Wow, and you despise Chaos.
And I despise Chaos, and I mean, I really despise them. But I love the colors that you can get from a Zeech army. And
the blues, the teals, the golds.
Yeah, I'm talking it from a painter's point of view. I never thought I'd ever attribute that word to me. But from a painter's point of view, I think that you can do the most with Zeech. And I also think that they have some of the best units in the Chaos armies for me. I like shooting, but when I have shooting, I want it to be devastating. I don't want nitpicking. I want to be able to, when I shoot you, to decimate your unit. And flamers and exalted flamers can definitely do that. And by the way, they can be battle line. Now, if you take, I believe it's called the Eternal Conflagration.
Yes.
So you can make flamers battle line.
Right. And that's a big deal. And then there were some changes to the battle line that we'll get into here in just a few minutes. They kind of have some trickery, I guess, to their pitch battle profiles that we'll talk about here. But sure. let's kind of work our way up the topic here. So summoning for Zeech. Similarly, as much is it really is the same mechanic as before. I guess I'll just put it that way. You know, Zeech predictably got points for spell casting. If anyone successfully casts a spell, Zeech doesn't really care where the magic comes from, so this means it can be either a Zeech wizard or an opposing wizard. The Zeech player is going to get points, which can be banked for summoning demons, which is going to take me back to, it's going to tie into kind of our question of the day here. Remember that thing I just said here, folks, summoning demons. Let's just stick with that real quick. You know, previously the big issue with the mechanic was the point costs were too high. So unless you were playing an extremely high point game where you weren't likely to get much use out of it, summoning was kind of a worthless thing, especially with Zeech. But the new battle tome lowers the floor of points while maintaining the ceiling, I guess, which gives you a bigger, a broader range to bring in things and your ability to gain these points to be able to summon, which is probably the change that Zeech wanted to see. But for me, and this is where it's going to sound like I'm disappointed here, it's what I didn't want to see come back, and it did. And this kind of has me concerned as a player and as a competitor.
Yeah, summoning's not going anywhere. Summoning is now an official mechanic of Games Workshop.
But there's a difference. There's a difference with this army that we're going to talk about here in a minute.
Sure.
Far as how that's going to bleed into that summoning. Yeah. You know, a new and interesting mechanic for the army is agendas. Have you heard about this one, Steve?
No, tell me.
So in the beginning of the hero phase, you can declare to your opponent that you're going to fulfill one of the agendas. And if you complete the task, then the unit who completed gets some type of a buff. So, in a cute bit of a game mechanics, calling back to the fluff, all of these involve the number 9. and in some capacity, some way. So, for example, if you choose to destroy a model with 9 or more wounds before the end of the turn, that unit that did the killing, you know, the killing blow or kills that model gets a +1 to their saves until the end of the round. So little things like that, like we kind of said with the Krajan Overlords, every little thing adds up. You know, it kind of has a cathartic effect on the army.
I love that mechanic. That's great. I love
it. So this kind of calls back to the written lore here a little bit. They finally added it into the game mechanics for the army, these agendas. Command traits, that was another thing. They've remained functionally the same for the most part. And this is good because Zeech, for the most part, I think really could have been grossly overpowered if they messed with this. You know, as a quick reminder, the traits are divided among three tables. We've got Mortals, Arcane, and Demon. And the dividing here is a bit strange. And let me explain this the best way I can. So if I mess up with this, Steve, kind of save me here. So here it is. As all mortals are Arcanites, but not all Arcanites are mortals. Okay. In general, mortals are whatever counts as humans. And strangely, the Ogryd Thaumaturge, which is an ogre, Chaos Ogre, has got a mortal keyword. And they all also have the Arcanite keyword. So go figure there. Zangors aren't demons, but they aren't human either. So they get the Arcanite keyword, but neither the mortal or the demon keywords. So while previously the first three entries of each command trait, you know, table were identical, now they're not. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah, I don't see a problem with that.
So even sharing the same names, GW has accounted for the redundancy and cut the mortal table down to three. So I think what they tried to do is by giving them back what will quickly become a very powerful summoning that we're going to talk about here, they tempered the command traits is what I'm trying to get at.
Okay. And we're going to find out just how tempered they were when we start playing games against them.
Well, that's one thing. But I think you're going to quickly forget about the command traits once we get into the piggybacking from the summoning. But there were some out-of-date traits that were given updates, such as magical supremacy, now adding 12 inches to the unbinding range and stuff like that. That you know, folks,
nice.
Buy the book. But I'm just, you know, we're going to give our high lows of some of the things that we think are going to affect the army and our opinions. But artifacts, they got trimmed down quite a bit. Now there's only 6 artifacts for mortals, 3 for Arcanites, you know, down from, I think, 6 or 8 before. I think it was 6. And 9 for the demons that were down from 12, I believe. Zeech artifacts in the first book suffered from being a lot of pretty mediocre options alongside 2 or 3 must-takes. So I think Games Workshop may have wanted to try to pare down the options, which, you know, kind of seems to be the flavor of all these new books. Some saw major changes like the Blades of Fate now replacing a Destiny dice on a 6 rather than re-rolling hits and wounds. So there were some changes there, too. Most of the artifacts still more or less function exactly as they did. Some have had rewrites here and there to clarify things or bring things up to modern language. But for the most part, the artifacts seem kind of vanilla to me, I guess the best way to put it.
And that's okay, because that army is based on sorcery and shooting. It's not based on, they don't need their artifacts.
Yeah.
The artifacts for them should be mediocre, because their real strength is coming from their spell casting and from their shooting.
You're right. And magic, that's Zeech's bread and butter. I mean, Zeech.
Oh, yeah. Obviously.
And Zeech was as I seem to recall, and I could be not remembering this quite right, but it was one of the first armies with unique spell disciplines that got, I think, 2 of them. One for the demons and 1 for the arcanes. I think in that book, that was the first time it was published that they were going to identify 2 separate spell lists. I think that was Zeech was the first one, I think,
okay.
with 6 spells apiece back then. It, you know, if you've been paying attention so far to my rambling here, folks, you'll be unsurprised to find that these spells haven't changed that much. Again, I think there's a reason why, and we're going to get to that reason here at the end of our little talk on Zeech, why some things seem very vanilla or well-tempered, because this army does have a hidden atomic bomb to it that I want to bring everyone back around to. But sticking with the magic here, Shield of Fate has been completely rewritten from the ground up. You know, previously it gave units saves that got better the more Destiny dice you had in reserve. So in other words, if you were to use 1 to 3 dice, you get to reroll 1 saves as before. But with 4 to 6 dice, a reroll, you can reroll all saves. 7 to 9 gives you rerolls all saves and the ability to ignore magic on a 4+. So they get a ward save if you use 7 to 9 dice. You know, that makes the spell, I guess, much more a meaningful consideration. So there's also a tension between using your dice, I guess, and getting the most out of the Shield of Fate, which didn't really exist before. So that's going to be talking back to a lot of the Zeech players on what do they do with their Destiny dice. So kind of a balancing act there. They got covens. Did you hear anything about these covens? I mean, every army now kind of has these, you know,
sub-factions,
I guess, coven. Yeah, exactly. And Zeech,
which is good. I like that.
Yeah. So, sub-factions, I guess, are reoccurring. You know, the reoccurring idea that all armies are now getting. So not to really get into a lot of these, we got the internal conflagration. What's the other one here? The host duplicitous, the cult of, transient form and the profane cult all exist as sub-factions now, though, honestly, in terms of mechanics, they are borderline unrecognizable to their previous incarnations. So just, you know, for you Zeech players out there that aren't just some nerd that read the book like I did, you're going to find that much different. I expect the Eternal Conflagration and the Profane Cult to be the popular in tournament circles. Depending on the flavor, mortals or demons, players prefer whatever they prefer. The former adds one rend to many demon range attacks, while the latter adds 1 to 2 hit rolls for, I believe it's Acolytes, I believe. It's the Acolytes, one of them, I'm not sure. But
okay.
The new Guild of Summoners also looks kind of amusing for those who can afford multiple Lords of Change. If you want to do an a la Slaanesh thing, it restricts summoning to only Lords of Change, but their cost is reduced to 9, there's the number again, for the first summoning, 18 for the second, and 27 for the third. While realistically, you won't see more than 2 in most games, hey, free greater demons, right? I mean, it works for Slaanesh. All right, so, you know, and then there's the battalions, you know. That didn't change into much for the sub-factions. They all return here more or less intact as to what you would expect and what was previous, though there are things that have been updated as largely nerfs with a few exceptions, which, you know, I can get into to whatever real degree, but I kind of want to kind of pause my talking here to kind of hear some of your thoughts, Steve, about kind of what you've been hearing on Zeech.
Yeah, one of the things that I really like is this Eternal Conflagration, because that gives you not only the ability to have the Flamers and the Exalted Flamers as the core of your army, essentially, but it also allows you to be able to cast all of this devastating magic in conjunction with all this devastating shooting. Mm-hmm. You said that the Internal Conflagration gives you an additional rend.
It does. Yeah.
So now you're talking rend 2 shooting.
Right.
Yeah. Rend 2 shooting.
Right.
Now, folks, if you look throughout this game, there are very few things in this game that give you rend 2 for shooting.
Right.
So, and this is going to be, and this is going to be units of this Ren 2 shooting.
Yeah.
So that's going to be devastating.
Yep. Yeah, and again, that one rend, that additional rend is to demon units only, but still, that's still negative 2. Are you still there?
I just think, I'm sorry. No, I'm just saying, I just think that rend of 2 is going to be so painful on the battlefield. I can't even imagine what kind of carnage is going to be put out by Zeech. I just think it's going to be devastating.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. A couple of the folks, you know, I got my early release on the books, and a couple of the other guys got theirs, some of the other content producers in the community and whatnot, and they were kind of down on Zeech, I think, initially.
I don't know why they would be.
Well,
it's a great army.
That's kind of where I'm at right now. And let me address one thing on the battalions before we get into the final chip shot here on the Zeech here. You know, Witchfire Coven now requires, is one of their battalions, and now requires a third unit of acolytes, and only lets, you know, one of those shoot per hero phase. So now you've got shooting in the hero phase. Change Host is another battalion. This thing saw a bit of a side grade where now you can swap units wherever you please rather than with each other, with the downside that you now must be more than 9 inches away from an enemy model, which kind of puts a stop to any of the fun shenanigans of switching a Fluxmaster with a Lord of Change into combat. So the good news, the Arcane Cabal did see an upgrade. Now you can pick one friendly model from the battalion, and when Destiny dice are used on that model, it gets to replace the dice used on a 2+ instead of a 4+, meaning there are some upsides if that's something you were interested in. So those are really the only big things that I kind of highlighted. And yes, folks, I took a highlighter to my book for the battalions. But otherwise, to kind of say what I'm going to say before I get to the main point here, for the battalions, the covens, the magic, the artifacts, and even the command traits, they're all kind of, they got their hot buttons, their hot points. Don't get me wrong. But I think what I'm about to say right here, in compilation with the summoning, is why those things were kind of vanilla. Otherwise, this army would be, there'd be no reason to play any other army. You ready for this one, Steve? Here it is.
Go.
I feel like we've taken a time capsule backwards. There's one big change here that stuck out to me, and it was like a nightmare coming back to me all over again.
Okay.
Horrors, and I did say horrors, are completely different now in a way that has some pretty wide repercussions on the faction and even Grand Alliance chaos overall. So for those who haven't experienced them before, horrors have always been a huge pain who would often try and vainly hug their opponent to death before dying. Let me just put it that way. They've gone through many iterations over the years because while a pretty simple concept to understand, documenting it in a way that wasn't easy to rules lawyers or be too unbalanced was incredibly difficult. In their previous incarnation, dying pink horrors created a new unit of blue horrors if one didn't exist, which you had to pay points for. This also spilled over to blues becoming brimstone horrors when the blues were killed. It wasn't an easy concept to grasp, and it also cost a ton of points that just made the whole thing unwieldy. Even worse, it led to a lot of rules exploitation where brimstone horrors became easy battle line to fill up lists. Now, I can already hear what a lot of people that have heard the rumors on this have already said. Well, hey, Pat, what are you talking about? Horrors of Zeech are battle line as long as it doesn't contain any blue horrors or brimstone horrors.
Exactly.
In the same unit at the time you put them on the table. So look what we've done. Since 2006, when Zeech won Adepticon and a ton of other major GT tournaments across the world, this was before the General's Handbook at that time made you pay for summoned units. We're right back to that again. Summoning, you don't have to have points off to the side for those units. You see, so what's going to happen now is you're going to have pink horrors. You know, I think you can get a max unit of 20 of the horrors of Zeech.
Yeah, they're limited to 20.
So let's say you start out with the pinks. You got 3 units of 20, all pinks. They're on an objective. They die. Now you double that unit size by putting blue horrors on there.
And then blue horrors turn to brimstone, right?
Yeah. So now GW has encoded the rules on the War Scroll to allow mixed units. There's now one now here's where this will probably get FAQ'd. You start out with pink horrors. It's not assumed that the blues and the brimstones are part of that unit because they split. You just can't have it on the same table at the time. Does that make sense?
Yeah. They don't become blue horrors until you kill a pink horror.
Yeah. So now GW has encoded the rules on the War Scroll to allow mixed units. There's now one War Scroll to represent all colors of horror, aptly titled Horrors of Zeech. This is what makes what I'm talking about a little bit Worse, dying pink horrors add blue horrors to the same unit, and dying blue horrors add brimstones to the same unit. There, done. So, there aren't any point costs tied to this now. And with them being backed into the, you know, the cost for the pinks, which is a lot more straightforward, you can see where this kind of shenanigans is going to take us right back to 2016 and how that guy won Adepticon.
Well, the change host is has always been a nightmare.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling it's going to be a nightmare again. The saving grace is that if a player is going to pull the shenanigans with the blues and the brimstones, they will not be able to use those units as core, as battle line. Now, any smart Tzeentch player is simply going to say, well, I have other options for cheap battle line.
Right.
So I'm not worried about the horrors. The horrors are going to be what I'm going to use to hold my objectives.
Right.
And anything else is going to be used to either fulfill the battle line requirements or is going to be used as, you know, obviously their characters,
right,
you know, or their shooters or whatever or whatnot. But the bottom line is the horrors, this is not going to stop Tzeentch players from doing what they want to do. Guaranteed.
Yeah, but I look at it this way. I think if you remember how we got to how summoning points were treated as reinforcements was because people were complaining about how summoning worked.
Oh yeah, summoning's going to get worse. It's not going to get better. This
yeah.
this mechanic is going to get worse as we move through these new books. I guarantee it.
Oh yeah, no, I completely agree with that. So let me just kind of rewind here because I kind of bandered on and I want to make sure everyone's with me. So a base unit of pinkies, and I'm talking about pink horrors here, costs 200
20
points.
Strong.
Yeah, 20 strong. If there's no pink horrors in the unit, you bump the cost down to 100. That's if you're going to take just blues.
Yes.
So, and just if you just take the brimstone, that's a wee little 80 points.
Yes.
But don't try and get cute with cheap battle lines. They only count as battle line if the unit starts with pink horrors.
And that's it.
Yeah. It's a lot of rules, and if you know, let me just say this, but if I think they did the best they could to make the thematic and iconic mechanic workable, and cover off as many exploitable areas as possible, do I think they did that? No, I don't.
Oh, God, no. They're just going to take three units of 10 pink horrors to fill their battle line, and then you're going to see the other big horror units with all of the different with all the different variations. Of course they are.
And that's where we're getting back to. But, you know, and that's kind of what I wanted to address about this army. But, you know, the fun doesn't stop there, folks. You know, we should take a little deeper look into the Gaunt Summoner. It can summon a unit of 10 lesser demons as always. That's always something the Gaunt Summoner could have done, whether it's in the Slaves of Darkness book, whether it's in the Tzeentch book. It's always been able to do this. One of the options being, here we go, folks, 10 pink horrors. That's a small problem here. The new war scroll for the horrors is called Horrors of Tzeentch. Now, depending on how GW publishes this, you know, moving forward, the old war scroll was actually called Pink Horrors May No Longer Exist. So this probably needs to be eroded or FAQ'd in some way because the ability to summon a 200-point unit that can split and split again might be way too powerful. And as I said in the beginning of my review, this is exactly how a Tzeentch army won Adepticon 2016. The guy went 5-0, his army was relatively untouched, and bang, that's how he did it. Was by splitting demons.
And you don't get the points for any of those units until you kill them completely.
Exactly. And how are you going to do that? So, I mean, there you go.
Yeah. And in the end, all you're doing is getting, 200 points?
Exactly. Yeah, 200 points.
Wow.
And so here's the thing that I'm saying right now. You know, a few days back when this army was, you know, when this book here was, I meant not army, but when this book was kind of in the sweaty palms of some of the early reviewers, you know, they made a lot of comments as far as, you know, revolutionary change for the meta. Is this going to be a crushing army? Telling people they're probably going to be disappointed. Well, I think those guys might have hit the pot dispensaries a little early because I don't think there's much to those kind of comments at all.
I agree. I think it's going to be a solid nine to ten.
Yeah, I think with the addition of the Covens being the notable exception as a large upgrade, along with the horrors of Zeech being able to go back and do what they did in 2016 to win a ton of major GT tournaments.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is what cracks me up, especially after GW's recent attempt to taper off Slaanesh's dominance of the competitive scene. I think they're a lot...
they're back.
I think they're a lot more way off of factions, you know, trying to shoot for constant domination across the world. I think what I'm trying to say here is, I think what they solved in Slaanesh, they simply just reintroduced with Zeech.
Yeah, Zeech is back. There's no doubt about it. It's going to be a 9 or 10.
Yeah.
And it's going to devastate armies. It's going to be in the top tables at Adepticon. You're going to see just literally hordes of people playing change host.
Yeah. You said hordes, didn't you?
Will you stop?
Sorry.
It is going to be that Adepticon army that you pray you don't have to face.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
unfortunately, but that's okay.
Yeah, and I think you know every cold meatloaf eating basement dweller out there right now is probably, you know, selling their Schwinn bicycle to try to get their hands on the Zeech army here. I think that's,
well, and there's no reason not to. It's a great army, but I will give this warning to the people who are not playing Zeech: buy the book.
Yes, I would say that for anything, guys. Buy the book for look.
Buy that book.
It's a cheap investment.
If you have a guy in your group, in your club that plays Zeech, I strongly suggest you buy the book.
Right.
Buy that book and read it from cover to cover, because you're going to be meeting these guys in tournaments and they're going to be pulling all these, you know, these shenanigans with these horrors and stuff. I mean, and I'm not saying they're going to be, you know, cheating or anything. I'm just saying these guys who play Zeech are going to know their army from top to bottom. You better pray you know it well, too, because if you don't, they're going to steamroll you.
Yeah, yeah, you're not kidding. Hey, I hope you're enjoying the Grimdark Live experience and the show. If you want to support the show, please like and subscribe on YouTube and follow us on our podcast. This way, you'll be alerted when we post new content. If you'd like to support Grimdark Live further, head over to grimdarklive.com, get a t-shirt, dice, or there's Patreon, which makes our show possible. Keeps our mics on and the lights buzzing. Big thanks to everyone, past, present, and future, who have supported Grimdark Live. We do this because of all of you, and of course, we will continue doing this for as long as we can. Okay, you guys ready for more Grimdark Live? Let's get back to the show. Here it is. It leads us right to the question of the day.
Sure.
You ready? So here it is, Steve. I think I might know the answer to this one. Which army, here's the question of the day here, folks. Which army will be the pre-Adepticon meta breaker?
That's tough. I am assuming that High Elves will be out before Adepticon, but I am going to go with my instinct, and I'm usually right. I think that Zeech is going to be the meta breaker for the next 4 to 5 months.
Yeah, you know,
I just have that sneaky feel. Zeech, never underestimate Zeech. If there's one thing I can tell any player, maybe if a person who's new to the game, never underestimate a Zeech player. They are usually highly professional players. They are usually the best of your players because there are so many mechanics to playing Zeech that you have to be made aware of, and you will usually see some of the best guys in the game playing this army. So I'm warning anyone who's thinking about going to a tournament for the first time, you better buy that book.
Yeah, I totally agree. And you know, it's funny, in thinking about this question, you know, question of the day, which army will be the pre-Adepticon meta breaker? Here's my thought, truly. You know, honestly, I can understand how many in the community would not be enjoying the meta in Age of Sigmar currently. You know, Steve, like myself, likes big trolls and large monsters. But the meta armies are always pretty much these hordes, unless the rules are just completely broken, you know, a la Reed Grizzlegore, for instance, you know, talking about buying a book. And GW did nothing to change the rules in the current General's Handbook to fix the issues, even with the current FAQ. So it would be easy to see where the argument for a horde army to be the dominant one could have a case made for. But with that said, I don't see my Nobblers, you know, 300 strong and a 2K list, being top tier. So in thinking about this question, I came up with the following armies, and I'll explain who my finalist is. I thought about Slaanesh. I thought about Skaven. I thought about Tzeentch and Fire Slayers. And all are very strong contenders with summoning, movement shenanigans and speed, ward saves, rend, and magic. But one stands largely apart, and it's mainly due to the reintroduction of its severe ability to outlast and outnumber its opponents on an objective-based game, and that's Tzeentch. I got a 1,000% agree with you, Steve. Not knowing what the high elves are going to be, but having probably a pretty good assumption of what they're going to be, I got to say that in this particular case, to answer the question of the day here, Metabreaker, who's going to be the pre-Adepticon Metabreaker, and even beyond that, Tzeentch.
Yeah. I would totally agree. At least 5 months.
Yeah, and for the same reason, it won Adepticon in 2016. I think this army will take the meta far past Adepticon, truly.
Yeah. It's going to go into the summer, depending upon what the elves look like.
Yeah. Yeah, the elves. I mean, I got to be honest with you. We're not to round back around to that now that we're kind of closing out this topic here, but I'm surprised that high elves are elves of light, or whatever they're going to be called, proper elves. I thought for sure dark elves or something like that were going to be before them. I really did.
To tell you the truth, I thought they were going to be a paired release.
Oh.
That it was actually going to be like high elves and then right after dark elves. I'm hoping that's still the case.
Yeah.
It would be the smart move.
It would be. Yeah,
because
it definitely would be.
Let's face it, the one that when the elves are finally released, and I believe they're both going to be released in the spring, the one that everyone's going to be waiting for after that is going to be the vampires.
Your soul that, blight.
The soul blight's coming. And I guarantee you that's going to be the big hit for the end of the year. That's my October pick. I already told you. I believe that's going to be the October release.
Yeah, right around Halloween. I bet you're right.
Yep. The Halloween release, the vampires.
Yep. Well, here it is, man. We're wrapping down the show. We're coming to the end of our first show back in 2020. And I think I'm going to take the closing thoughts on this one here, bud.
Lay it on me.
So here are my closing thoughts, folks. New year, new attitude. And this is honestly what I want to say to everyone. Make 2020 a banner year for your hobby and for your game. Make this year all about pushing your limits and trying new things. Write up a list of what you want to accomplish and leave it somewhere where you have constant access to it, somewhere where you're going to see it often. Tell your friends your goals and what you're planning on doing so it becomes a continued point of conversation and motivation. Challenge yourself to be a better hobbyist and a gamer. Get at least one game in a week, every week, as often as you can. Even if it's a small 500-point game, a skirmish game of even less than that, 250 points. If you can get a game in, do it. Get involved in events for painting and gaming, i.e. tournaments, different things like that. We got so many tournaments around the corner. We've got we got Polar Vortex, we got LodgeCon, we've got Adepticon, we've got all these great tournaments that are almost in sequential order of each other. You gotta look at those things. All of which, you know, meaning tournaments, all of which make great deadlines. And having that time pressure, maybe it's gonna help you achieve those goals. People seem to thrive under pressure sometimes. Complete the army that you have in front of you. Or, if that's done, start a totally new army. Ultimately, your goal this year should be to complete something, accomplish something, encourage someone. What's on your list? Have you started any type of list for your goals? If you haven't, I hope you do. If you have, I hope you keep going until you've accomplished what it is in front of you right now, and then keep going. Make 2020 the year that you can look back on in 2021 and say, yeah, I got those five armies done. And yeah, I competed in a tournament that I was nervous to compete in, and I did great. That's my challenge to you all listening right now, and to myself and to you, Steve, and to every Grimdark goon that's out there. This is a new year. Have a new attitude and finish something. Get out there. Inspire yourself. Inspire someone else. That's my closing thoughts.
Love it.
And there you have it, man. You can't with that, that's a heck of a way to close the show.
One down, many to go.
Yeah, another great show. Well, here we are, our first show of 2020 and many more to come. So looking forward to a great year, Steve. It's going to be a good one, bud.
Absolutely. 2020 is going to be the year of the bloodbath.
That's exactly right.
Grimdark Live, we'd like to thank you for slumming it through another show with us for all things dice, dragons, demons, and a dwarf in the Age of Sigmar worlds. We'll be back live next Thursday, so until then, remember, roll them dice fun and fair, and don't be a frickin' short pants. If you missed the live show, you can catch us again right here on the next Grimdark Live podcast. Never fear, gang. There'll be more great content from Grimdark Live throughout the week with Monster Mondays, Table War Tuesdays, Warhammer Wednesdays, Grimdark Grudge Matches, and a ton more. So stay tuned and stay grim, all you dice chucking, glue sniffing gamer goons. You're all awesome.
Looks like I picked the wrong week to stop sniffing glue.
Remember, embrace the main message here from Grimdark Live, and that's a social contract we have between gamers and the commitment we have to each other and this community. We're only as good as our last game. Check us out at GrimdarkLive.com. Don't forget to give our channel a like or subscribe if you haven't already done so. So long, Grimdark Goons. Until next time, may the dice gods bless you and your sweaty palms.